Pump it up this summer, literally. Underinflated tires can overheat and endanger lives. Whether you're driving across town or across Florida, make sure your tires are properly inflated, damage-free, and have adequate tread depth. The trip to your destination can be half the fun, so take your time and enjoy the ride. The Florida Highway Patrol reminds you to slow down and stay cool this summer. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. Visit flhsmv.gov for more information.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Welcome to the weekend and this edition of the Florida Roundtable on the Florida News Network. I'm Bill Mick. You can catch up with me and podcasts of previous Roundtable shows at BillMick.com. They're right there at the top of the page for you. Coming up today on the Roundtable, we're going to take a look at Florida and space. A lot of great things going on and some concerning things. Falcon 9's been grounded by the FAA. The Boeing Starliner crew got to the International Space Station. They're not quite home yet. Competition for Elon Musk's Starship says it shouldn't be launched from the Space Coast. The International Space Station's coming down at some point. SpaceX has the contract. Propulsion without fuel changes space flight. And how about the Mars simulation being complete? All of that ahead with space reporter Jim Banky today on the Florida Roundtable.
Pump it up this summer, literally. Underinflated tires can overheat and endanger lives. Whether you're driving across town or across Florida, make sure your tires are properly inflated, damage-free, and have adequate tread depth. The trip to your destination can be half the fun, so take your time and enjoy the ride. The Florida Highway Patrol reminds you to slow down and stay cool this summer. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. Visit flhsmv.gov for more information.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Glad you're with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick, along with Jim Banky. And Jim is a decades experienced space reporter. Nobody better in my mind to talk to than Jim Banky when we're talking issues of space. So let's get right to it. Jim, thank you for taking the time. Great to hear from you again, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Bill. Glad to talk about space all the time.
Well, and nobody better to talk to. I've enjoyed we've done this together for years, and glad to be able to bring you to a statewide audience here in Florida, Jim. One of the most interesting and most recent developments in space has been after an incident, after a launch at Vandenberg, SpaceX has been halted from launching their Falcon 9 rocket, which has been immensely successful since its inception, by the FAA. What's got the FAA's attention, and what's happening with the Falcon 9 being grounded for right now?
Well, first of all, the Falcon 9 is grounded because during that mission, its second stage, the upper stage, developed what looks like a liquid oxygen leak, and it kind of froze up the plumbing, and the engine shut down like it's supposed to. And then they coasted for a while. And then when they tried to restart the engine for a final burn before they released their payload, basically the upper stage blew up. So they have an oxygen leak problem. You know, they're looking at the plumbing and trying to figure that out. I have a lot of confidence that that'll happen rather quickly. Heard one of the company members saying it's the company's top priority right now. But in terms of the FAA grounding, that's normal. That's standard procedure. You know, you can't have a rocket failing, a commercial rocket failing in any way, in a way that, you know, you're concerned about the system, you're concerned about the hardware, and so therefore you're concerned about public safety.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right. That's all appropriate. And so the FAA grounds the rocket. If United Launch Alliance's first Vulcan rocket had failed in some way last year, they would have, quote unquote, grounded the Vulcan rocket as well until those issues were fixed and resolved to the FAA's satisfaction. So again, in this competition and in this online world and everybody, the SpaceX fan just going crazy because their rocket failed, you know, they look to the FAA and the government and say, you know, well, look, now you're getting in our way, or, you know, you're grounding us, and that's not fair or whatever. But perfectly normal, perfectly standard operating procedure. And again, I have every confidence that given SpaceX's experience, you know, they're gonna turn this thing around pretty quick, and we'll be launching rockets again.
The Falcon 9's been successful for SpaceX, like, since its inception. This would seem to be an anomaly. Is that what they have to determine, just exactly what it was? And we haven't seen it with any of these other rockets. So where do we go now?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they've got their telemetry. They got their information radio down from the vehicle. They're looking at all the parameters, pressures and fuel flows and temperatures and all that. And then looking at the processing history, you know, was there anything different about this upper stage? Was there some new piece installed? Was there a test that was missed, or a piece of the hardware that may have been just up against its limits about what's acceptable to fly? I mean, who knows? It could be any of those things or something completely different. But the Falcon 9 has been an absolutely successful vehicle. I mean, it's been years since they've had a failure. They've had hundreds of launches, which I'm just still overwhelmed by that they've had hundreds of launches, and they've only been around a decade, you know, compared to the history that we've seen at the Cape over the years with Atlas and Delta and whatnot.
Sure.
Jim,
we're at under a minute here. It's got to be devastating with all the commercial launches they've been doing and all the support they're doing for their own things, for satellites and the like, not to mention going to the space station and the like. It's got to be a concern for SpaceX, and you think they're going to turn it around quickly then?
Yeah, I do. And it might have even been Elon that I heard on an interview when he was talking about Starship at Texas, where he said, but right now the company's top priority is to fix this problem with Falcon 9 and get these rockets flying again. And I'm sure that's going to happen before too long.
And you think that's a quick turnaround. That's good to hear. Jim Banky is with us. Nobody knows space better, that I know anyway. And we continue this weekend on the Florida Roundtable right here on the Florida News Network. We're back in moments. Stay with us.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
I'm a father.
I'm an aunt. I'm a neighbor.
I'm a veteran.
But out here, on the water,
I'm operating the boat.
A boat operator.
I'm a safe operator.
The operator.
If you're behind the wheel of a boat, you only have one job. Keep everyone safe. Always scan the water and be aware of your surroundings. Learn more about boating safety at myfwc.com. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Glad you're with us on the Florida Roundtable here on the Florida News Network. Bill Mick, our guest this week, Jim Banky, space reporter extraordinaire. And Jim, we've got a lot going on in space, a lot of it impacting our neighbors all across the Sunshine State. And of utmost concern right now is what's going on with the Boeing Starliner crew. They're up at the space station now weeks longer than they were anticipated to be. Break down that launch, what happened pre, during, and on their way to the space station, and tell us where we're sitting today on this thing.
Yeah, sure. And you know, you're going to hear me be very positive about all of this and not as alarming as maybe some of my colleagues in the media have put it out there. They're not stranded in space is the big message. And, you know, while I'm certainly biased towards space and aviation, you know, I'm going to try to give you the facts as I understand them.
As campy as it was, I did like Lost in Space, just so you know.
Well, that's right. And we forgive you for that because, well, we can talk more about that later, perhaps. But so Starliner is making its first, is in the midst of its first crewed flight, its first one with people on board. It has had a troubled history in terms of its operation and, things that have gone wrong on previous unmanned flights, uncrewed flights. And so that raised concerns. There were delays. The first launch did make it to the first unpiloted launch did make it to the International Space Station because of a software issue that affected its timing. And so the automated system has wanted to do things that it shouldn't have been doing at the time. So it eventually came back. NASA and Boeing agreed that Boeing should fly a second flight, and so it did do that. And that, again, unpiloted, automated flight test did make it to the space station. Everything seemed to work pretty well and gave them the confidence that they could make the third flight with people on board. So as you approach launch, there were some last-minute issues with the rocket itself, with the Atlas V. Which were resolved, had nothing to do with Starliner, had nothing to do with Boeing. But then the rocket lifts off and sends Butch and Sonny on their way to the space station. And during its approach, well, and so I guess we need to back up. So before the rocket actually launched, they did detect a helium leak. NASA, Boeing, Mission Control, Flight Control, and all that did detect a small helium leak inside the service module of the Starliner spacecraft. The service module, as you'll hear me repeat several times, has the propulsion systems, support systems for the capsule, but it detaches before the return to Earth, and it burns up in the atmosphere. So once you launch it and you do the return, you'll never get it back, and that's an important fact, an important thing to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So they found this little helium leak in the system. Helium is used to pressurize, in this case, a set of thrusters that help steer the vehicle while it's making its approach to the space station and during its return to Earth. And they determined that the leak was so small and that they had so much helium still available to them that it was safe to launch with this little leak. And a lot of people say, well, oh my gosh, you launched with a known leak. How dare you do that? Well, you know what? You get into your car every single day and drive it somewhere, and it's leaking something somewhere. It's just systems leak with fluids and gases and whatnot. That's I don't want to say necessarily to be expected, but I'm not alarmed by it.
And we're talking mechanical devices that will have those things occur.
Sure. And if you're only leaking, you know, a half a percent of, or let's say a half ounce of helium, that's probably the bad unit of measurement, but you're leaking a half ounce of helium, you know, once every hour, and you've got 1,000 pounds of helium available to you, you know, for your flight, and you only need 100 pounds of it, but you got 1,000 pounds of it. you know, I think you can make the case to say we can accept that leak. We're going to have plenty of leak, plenty of helium to make it through the flight. So that was kind of in a gross sense the rationale for flying.
Okay.
So then they get up there and they're making their approach, and a couple more helium leaks pop up. Actually, I think three more popped up, so they're like four altogether. And this affected the way some of the thrusters worked. And the automated system shut some of these thrusters down. Now you got 28 thrusters to be able to steer this thing while it's making its approach. So there's plenty of other thrusters that you can be clever in how you use them to safely dock with the space station. So they made it no problem. Now the issue is, what are you going to do about the return to Earth? Are the thrusters good enough to use? Are they safe enough? You have, you know, all the redundancy you need. Now, the thrusters are not what brings the vehicle back. In addition to the 28 thrusters, there's another 20 thrusters that are more powerful that are used for the deorbit burn, for the braking maneuver that allows the capsule to come back.
Okay.
So the RCS thrusters, the steering thrusters, are there as a backup. So if your primary thrusters fail, all 20 of them or any combination of them, you may need some of those other thrusters, the weaker ones, the less powerful ones, to serve as a backup to help slow you down to bring you back. So the big concern is, okay, if you lose too many of these thrusters, are you redundant for coming back? And so what they found was, in doing a lot of testing on orbit, that the thrusters that failed, they hot-fired them, they fired them up again, tested them, and all but one of them came back to work just fine. And if the thrusters aren't activated for use, then these helium leaks they were concerned about don't happen. The helium only leaks when you basically turn on the thruster to make it ready to be used.
It wasn't traveling the path to be used, so it was still in its reservoir, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all shut down. You're not burning gas when the car is off. So
right.
You're not burning helium when your thrusters are off.
Okay.
And so now you're in a perfectly safe situation on orbit. Now, as we've just been talking for these few minutes, you can tell already this is very complicated. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of variables involved, and it's hard to keep track of them all. Amidst all of the hype of, oh my gosh, they're stranded and it's Boeing and Boeing can't do anything right these days, blah, blah, blah. So now you've got a situation where you've got this hardware acting up. It's a test flight. It's the first time they're flying with humans on board. They want to understand why these thrusters behaved in a way that they didn't expect. And so they need to do testing. And the big reason why they're still on board, still at the space station, is because what I said earlier, the service module doesn't return. So there's no way to get this hardware back where you can have it on the ground and look at it and rip it apart and, you know, examine all
the pieces. So they have to test it while they're still there.
They have to test it while they're still there, and they can do testing on the ground, which they've been doing, to try to recreate the problem, so that they can figure out what they need to do to fix the problem for the next flight. And that's what's taking time, and that's what they're going through, and it's that information they're looking for is why they're still up there. They're not stranded. They don't need a rescue flight. If they need to come back home, they will come back home. When it's the right time for them to come back home because engineers and managers say they have the data they need to fix the problem on future flights, then they'll come back.
That's fantastic. These astronauts, Jim, have said if they've got to come back, they're perfectly confident in this vehicle and there's not going to be a problem coming back at all. You concur with that, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, when this Russian satellite blew up a couple of weeks ago and had all this orbital debris that they were concerned about, all of the astronauts and cosmonauts on board the space station all retreated to their respective vehicles, ready to undock and come home if they needed to. And that included Sonny and Butch going into the Starliner, shutting the hatch, and being ready to come back home if they needed to. So they're up there, they're safe, they're looking at the hardware, they want to understand how to fix this problem. They don't have the data they need yet to be able to say, here's how we're going to fix it. They're working on that, and when they get all that together, they'll come home. And if there are other things that force them to come home in because of schedule, because of other crews coming up, because of other events on the space station, then they'll approve the flight to come home.
That's good to hear. I'm relieved that they have a vehicle they can rely upon, and that everyone is confident that's going to be the case. Let me ask you about the trip up for a minute, though, because you said something. These thrusters that were experiencing the shutdown because of the leak, did they have the capability to manually adjust those thrusters as they found their way to the space station, or is that all automated?
No, the final approach is manual. The final approach is Butch flying that thing into dock. And so, you know, you can just select different thrusters to use. Obviously, all these 28 thrusters as sets point in different directions. So, you know, forward, backward, upward, down, you know, in space, you got all sorts of dimensions to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick different thrusters to work in different ways to make, you know, the vehicle go the way it is. You maybe think of the shuttle when thrusters, the way the thrusters are pointed in space, the way the thrusters in the orbiter back in the day pointed, you know, you could fire thrusters forward and backward at the same time, but because of the slight way they were pointed, it actually caused the orbiter to move down a little bit, you know, so it didn't just break them. It actually kind of sunk them, you know, they in a downward way. And my point is that, you know, you can use combinations of thrusters in a way that moves the vehicle, you know, by taking advantage of the way they're pointing. So Butch, you know, shuts down four thrusters or whatever, the automated system shuts down four thrusters. He's still got 24 to use. He's still got ways of setting up combinations of them to be able to safely maneuver into the space station dock, which he did because it's there and it's safe and it's all connected just fine.
So a little Tokyo drift with a space vehicle. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is. And so all of this is happening in the backdrop of, you know, Boeing's aviation problems, which I could talk about for another 10 minutes, you know, and basically it is, okay, there have been problems, but every time there's a hiccup, there's turbulence on board, a wheel falls off, they blame Boeing.
Right.
Not the weather, not the airline's maintenance crews.
Right.
You know, the drinks aren't served correct during a flight, and they blame Boeing for you know, not having enough vodka on board.
Yeah, I can see where that would be the case. So you're confident in this team that has designed, built, assembled this vehicle, and the trip that went up and the trip that'll come back, it's going to be just fine.
I believe so, and I know some of the guys that are the senior managers there, and that just, it's going to work just fine.
Black back with more in moments on the Roundtable.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Behold the power of the peanut. Parents of newborns, you are the true superheroes. And to help support the safe and healthy dietary growth of your baby, harness the power of the peanut and peanut butter. Yes, it's a fact to explore. Food allergy experts now agree that feeding small amounts of peanut foods to infants can help reduce peanut allergies. Learn more at preventpeanutallergies.org.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Crump witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends, and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as The Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion or your race, or because you have children or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Back on the roundtable with our space expert, Jim Banky, informative about all the things going on in and around space, and with me being headquartered, and Jim as well, on the Space Coast, nice to have this resource available to give us those insights. And Jim, we've recently seen in our local news, and nationally as well, if you're in the space community, that competitors of SpaceX are challenging the idea that Elon Musk's Starship on that super heavy Falcon 9 should be launched here from the Space Coast, primarily due to environmental concerns. I'm thinking, in all honesty, probably due to competition concerns. How are you seeing this, and what do you know about it?
Well, I've always been a little surprised at that argument. When you look at the history of our space program here on the Space Coast, and this goes back to Apollo. I mean, even before that, but certainly when you're talking about Merritt Island and the Kennedy Space Center being on Merritt Island, and the fact that you've got a spaceport that has existed on Merritt Island, home of the Merritt Island National Wildlife Refuge, mm-hmm. for 60 years without any evidence of natural disasters caused by space operations, you know, the synergy, the cooperation, the complementary nature of working with nature out there. These are things that the folks running the space program take seriously and work at, you know, so that if there are any pollution concerns, you know, there are measures in place to mitigate that. The way they work with nature, I mean, it's a stellar story that has never really fully been told or understood as to how well nature works with the technology out there.
Well, and if you go to the Space Center Visitor Center complex and you take the tour that goes out to the launch pads around the area, they talk about the nature and you see the wildlife, if you're there at the right time especially, but you're going to see the wildlife and the beauty that is around the Space Center. That's true.
Oh, the wildlife is great, I always get a kick out of, like, when I give tours out there, I'll be talking about the history and the pads and, you know, this is where John Glenn launched and This is where Alan Shepard launched, and this is where the first Apollo launch took place, and the first trip to Mars took place, and you know, the people are interested, but then they see an armadillo race across the room. They go, "Oh, look at that! It's an armadillo!" You know, and they get all excited. You know, so yes, nature is an important part of things out there. So I don't understand the environmental concerns, but you know, maybe I'm biased. Maybe I love a good sonic boom, and certainly that was one of the arguments made that, well, if you know, Starship's going to start flying, the noise of the rocket, because it is so powerful, I mean, twice as powerful as the Saturn V was, you know, is going to be a problem. Or all these vehicles coming back, you know, maybe an occasional double sonic boom with the Falcon 9 every other week or so, you know, can be managed, but if these big rockets are coming back routinely, you know, then suddenly people are going to have a problem with sonic booms. I don't buy the argument. And I don't buy the argument that we're going to suddenly pollute the area, or that, you know, there's going to be issues with the wildlife. It's just the history and the experience and the culture of space operations out on Merritt Island and Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. It just doesn't match for me. It just doesn't fly for me.
Well, if you can't launch from here, the home of American spaceflight, is there somewhere that is environmentally safe to launch that can provide the same advantages that launching from the Space Coast does?
If you're going to make the argument about environmental impact being a negative thing, then there's nowhere in this country with the not in my backyard attitude that you're going to get anything but, you know, the same kind of arguments from a group of people who just don't see things the way other people see things. So I would prefer that they launch from here for business reasons, economic reasons, for orbital mechanics reasons, why it makes sense to fly from here, why it makes sense to be up against the ocean and be able to go out over the ocean with different trajectories. And I just want to plane see a Starship launch where I don't have to go to Texas to see it. It just, you know, I'm glad other people are developing launch sites. I'm all for open competition and spaceports being a regular thing around the world. But by gosh, I'm loyal to Cape Canaveral. You know, I want those rockets flying from here. And I don't want anybody getting in the way of that happening. And a Starship launching from Pad 39A is going to be, you think you've seen something before, wait till you see that happen and feel that power of that rocket lifting off from the cave.
Well, speaking of launches from here, we also have things in space that have to come back. NASA has let the contract for the retirement of the International Space Station, and part of it's going to have to be escorted back into the atmosphere before it gets ditched in the ocean, and that contract has gone to SpaceX. SpaceX has earned their bones in the space business, it seems, over this last decade or so, and it seems like we are seeing NASA rely on them for things that they know they need done right. And maybe I'm misreading it, but it seems that way to me.
Oh, I think you're reading it exactly right. SpaceX has proven that they know what they're doing. You know, I mean, irrespective of this little hiccup with the upper stage here that they're dealing with now, they've proven that they know what they're doing, that they can deliver on promises, maybe not as fast as they say they can deliver. Elon's known for being, you know, let's fly next year, and maybe 2 years later it flies. But you know, they said, quote unquote, they said you'd never be able to bring a rocket back to land on a barge in the middle of the ocean. And now that is as routine as, I mean, after all these years of me covering launches, I'm more fascinated by SpaceX landing a rocket on a barge or even back here at the Cape than I think I am with the launch itself. It is just an amazing thing. And when you think of the economics involved with that, so.
Well, you're throwing a BB at a postage stamp in the middle of a moving ocean. It is phenomenal. It's surprising.
So give them credit. And so giving them the contract to bring the space station back using basically a Dragon capsule with what's called the trunk, kind of their service module, not really, but the trunk, the cylinder piece that sticks on the back, and making that just a big rocket stage, you know, it's an easy selection to make, and I think it's an appropriate one and the right one to make.
What are the mechanics of getting the space station back down as safely, and what else goes on in decommissioning that space station?
Well, they talked about that, and NASA talked about that in a briefing a week or so ago. It's a year-long process. They'll start letting the space station drift down by itself just through automatic atmospheric drag. I mean, there are tenuous wisps of atmosphere even that high up, a couple hundred miles up. And so the station will slowly come back down to a certain altitude. The crew will stay on board basically until, I think it's maybe a month or two before it would actually re-enter. They're talking about bringing some things back. Pretty much they just deactivate things, put the thing into a mode where it can be operated on its own. And then at some point it gets to an altitude where they fire up the engines of this modified Dragon spacecraft and literally just dump the whole thing into the atmosphere. A lot of pieces will survive and make it into the ocean. That's why they're going to put it into the ocean. That's why they want to make sure that it's a controlled reentry. So it's a long, drawn out process. The vehicle that will bring, you know, that will bring the thing back probably will go up about a year or so in advance. You know, they have roughly 2030 targeted for this. A lot will depend on solar activity between now and then, and certainly then. The more the sun, more solar activity is, the more it heats up the Earth's atmosphere. The Earth's atmosphere expands, so thicker parts of the atmosphere reach a higher part of the orbit, which increases the drag, which increases the speed at which the space station would lower its orbit. That's what happened to Skylab back in the 70s. They wanted to launch the shuttle to go up and rescue it, but solar activity kicked up, and the thing dropped down faster than we were ready to fly the shuttle with. And so Skylab enters on its own, uncontrolled. Pieces of it hit Australia, famously. So we don't want that to happen with this space station. It's much bigger, much more hardware involved. So the Dragon will attach to it. At some point, the crew will leave and abandon ship, and they'll dump the whole thing into the water.
Jim, will they bring things back from the space station, artifacts maybe for display at the Space Center and the like? I mean, what a big piece of space history this is.
Yeah, there's talk of that, you know, bringing back panels that have stickers on them and patches. They definitely want to bring back the space station bell that rings every time people who arrive and depart. Mm-hmm. So that is a consideration, and they are talking about it.
That's interesting to hear, and it's just amazing the things that are going on in space and the plans for future space stations. Commercial as opposed to governmental.
Yeah, that's right, and that's part of the plan, that we'll have somewhere to go before we lose the space station. There'll be commercial space stations up there.
We'll pick it up in moments on the Florida News Network.
How would you like to get a free smartphone? If you own a smartphone, listen to this incredible offer that's almost too good to be true. Right now, you can switch your plan and get service with us for as little as $2 a day. Guaranteed for life. Plus, get a free smartphone every year. Call the free smartphone hotline now and we'll move your number from your existing service. Think of your savings. So don't wait. Switch your plan, save money, plus get a free smartphone every year. Call the free smartphone hotline right now. We guarantee you're going to love our service. If you don't like what we say, you can hang up on us. But you won't. Right now, you can switch your plan and get service with us for as little as $2 a day. Guaranteed for life. Call the free smartphone hotline right now. 800-942-1325. 800-942-1325. 800-942-1325. That's 800-942-1325.
Living with a body of water right outside your home sounds delightful until these boogers start showing up. Mosquitoes aren't just annoying. They can carry deadly diseases like Zika and West Nile virus. But with Summit Mosquito Dunks, you can have your pond without all the worry. Simply drop a Summit Mosquito Dunk into standing water and kill mosquito larvae for 30 days or longer. Mosquito dunks are harmless to people, pets, fish, and wildlife. So it's just that stop hanging around. Visit SummitResponsibleSolutions.com.
Life can be full of risks.
One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
Continuing with space reporter Jim Banky, it's Bill Mick on the Florida News Network with the Florida Roundtable as we look at space and a lot of things and a lot of business going on there. Jim, before we move on from the decommissioning of the International Space Station, you talked about them having to basically escort the station back into the atmosphere and let it break up and pieces, yes, falling into the ocean. What about all the launches that we're doing, SpaceX and others, that are putting up, and it's not just the U.S. You've got other countries doing their launches as well. You've got Starlink satellites. How much of that is in the way of anything we're trying to do in space? And does that complicate retiring the space station and getting it back down here safely?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes and no.
Okay.
So, as usual with spaceflight, it's a complicated thing. First of all, I got to say, space is a lot bigger than you think it is. You know, I mean, people say, well, you're launching all these satellites, they're getting in the way of everything. We, you know how much room is up there? I mean, you know, I mean, it is a huge, vast thing. You know, you look at you look at our own nation and where people live and where people don't live, and you suddenly realize there's a lot more areas where people don't live than people do live. But that said, even in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, people do run into each other,
yeah,
sometimes literally. You know, so orbital debris and things happening in orbit are a real concern. You know, pieces do run into pieces, and shuttles have come back with dings in the windshield, and the space station has holes in its solar arrays, because of damage from micro, you know, orbital debris. So it is a concern, and it is something that the space communities worldwide recognize. And so there are agreements in place to minimize the chance of orbital debris so that when a rocket stage like the upper stage of the Falcon 9 that failed in this case and blew up, caused some orbital debris. But there are measures in place where these upper stages leave enough propellant after they finish their mission to fire again and put themselves back in the atmosphere and burn up. Not everybody follows that rule sometimes, but that is the intent. And a lot of the, you know, folks that you think of, European Space Agency, the Russians, the Chinese, Japanese, all pretty much do, you know, abide by those guidelines. It says we're gonna keep space as clean as possible.
We're obviously sharing space on the space station with the Russians. That relationship, at least in space, seems to be much more intact than the one here on the ground. How's the relationship with other space agencies, and is it a cooperative effort as they look at this? Because you don't want to be in each other's way, I wouldn't think.
No, you don't. And they do. There are international, you know, committee, if you will, out of the United Nations that keeps track of everybody's, you know, things. You got to file things with the United Nations when you're going to go up there, what orbit you're in, and your purpose and all that, the specifics of the flight. So that is all coordinated. That is all considered. Now, you know, people do take issue to Starlink. Certainly the astronomers take issue with all of these satellites up there that they worry their night sky, that it gets in the way of their observations. And there's some validity to those arguments. You know, it's a return on investment. It's a trade-off between, you know, this thing and that thing, the economic benefit, the idea that you can have high-speed internet connectivity from anywhere in the world, literally in the middle of the ocean, you know, versus not having that. And
it's
those
changed
benefits.
Your trip on a cruise ship, has it not?
Oh, it absolutely has.
Yeah.
And, you know, your ability to watch movies anywhere you want, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all the considerations, and so what you're asking about is, you know, considered and discussed and thought of, and plans put in place. And so bringing back the space station, for example, is the right thing to do, because you dump it into the ocean. If you don't do that, it could come down anywhere. If you try to boost it to a higher orbit where it might not come down for that many years, then it is a hazard at that altitude. And there are other spacecraft and satellites orbiting there. And so if one small satellite hits the International Space Station, boy, the debris that you can get from that will mess you up in all sorts of other places. Not quite as bad as what's seen in the movie Gravity, but, you know, think about that when you start thinking about orbital debris.
Boy, take me to Hollywood. We could go off on those topics. I like the concept of that movie, but lo and behold, it just came off as so unbelievable. It was, come on.
Yeah. It stretched credibility, even for us space cadets who, you know, cringe every time something isn't presented just right.
Even those of us who loved Lost in Space but became big Star Trek fans when that came about. Jim, speaking of, yeah, we're looking
at... Well, that's you for saying that.
We're looking at going to Mars. There are those who argue we need to do it with robots, no humans, and yet humans are in consideration. We pick that up next with Jim Banky this weekend on the Florida Roundtable here on the Florida News Network. Stay with us.
It's the first day of the first grade, and she found a new best friend. It's a laid-back Sunday afternoon you wish would never end.
The homemade taste of Bluebell and good friends gathered round. The good old days are being made right now.
The new Bluebell cookies and cream cheesecake is cheesecake ice cream with chocolate cookie crusted cheesecake pieces and chocolate cream filled cookies. Again, cheesecake ice cream with chocolate cookie crusted cheesecake pieces and chocolate cream filled cookies. Buy two.
The good old days are being made right now.
The good old days are being made right now.
Look for Bluebell ice cream at your local grocer and pick up your favorite flavor today.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Have you lost Florida Medicaid? At healthcare.gov, you can find a low-cost, quality health plan.
Do plans cover doctor visits?
What about emergency care?
And prescriptions?
All covered and more. Plus, with the new law, 4 out of 5 customers can find a plan for $10 or less per month with financial help. Healthcare.gov is here for you. Enroll today for coverage starting the first of next month. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Shortness of breath, patients confused, temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready, let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is...
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrol.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up this weekend's edition of the Florida Roundtable with space expert Jim Banky. Thank you for spending your time with us here on the Florida News Network. Jim, the show's flown by, and appropriately so since we're talking space, but it's always a joy to sit down and talk these things with you because of what you bring to the table. We closed our last segment thinking about going to Mars, exploring Mars, the reasons therefore. And there are those who argue, let's just send robots. We don't need to send people. Yet we just completed a little over a year-long NASA Mars mission simulation. Those, in quotes, astronauts spent over a year in that isolated environment. What did we learn, and where's it all taking us?
Yeah, what a thing to consider. I mean, as a kid, you know, would you be willing to go sit and live in a tent for 378 days and pretend you're on another planet? And that's what they did. They made a big deal out of this, a 3D printed habitat. But out at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, four people went into this habitat, this container, this apartment, or whatever you want to call it, and pretended they were living on Mars. And while you weren't testing necessarily technology that you would use on Mars, because you're on Earth, you know, you got oxygen, you got, you know, and you got Earth gravity and all right. that.
You didn't have to grow any potatoes like Matt Damon did.
But you did grow things to see if you could grow things inside, you know, so that you could, you know, pretend like you're living. What do you need to do to live on Mars? I mean, they did things like even when they wanted to communicate with, you know, quote unquote, mission control, even though you're on Earth and literally the room is next door, they put in a 22-minute delay in the communications to simulate the time it takes a radio signal to go between Mars and Earth. So if I'm in this Mars habitat, if I'm pretending I'm on Mars and I want to ask how the weather is, I say, you know, Houston, how's the weather down there? And 44 minutes later, you'll get your answer, you know. So that idea of living in an isolation, living together, four people in a cramped environment for more than a year.
Sounds like college.
The interpersonal relationships, the stress that's involved in that, you know, they would throw simulated problems at them. They pretend to go on Mars walks where they literally suit up and go outside, you know, their cabin and pretend they're walking on Mars. So all those kind of human factors things is what they tested here. And there's going to be two more of these tests. And, you know, while we're trying to develop the hardware to go, we still need to understand the people part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what these kind of simulations really bring to the table.
Do we have any reports back yet of what they have learned through the process? Did they do any reporting while they were isolated for a year? Or are they still studying that and trying to bring it back now?
No, they're still trying to figure that out. I mean, they only came out of the habitat, I think it was the first week of July, something like July 7th or something. So, you know, the story so far has only been that the first Mars expedition has been completed. Now they got to go do the studies and write the papers, and that'll take some time to figure out. But they came out happy and alive and willing to do it again. So that must tell you something.
Well, and they've got to be excited about it. That's true. A lot to be excited about in space, Jim, and less than a minute that we've got here. What are you most excited about that you see happening in space right now? You're involved in this every day.
I'm excited about everything, you know, and I remain excited. I've been a space cadet since I'm a kid. And, you know, decades later, I still am. There's so much to learn, so much to explore, so many ways to continue to use space. The idea that, you know, I can get on my GPS in my car, I watch football games on the satellite dish. I mean,
and we got to leave it there. There's a lot more coming. Jim Banky, thank you for this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I do appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you, folks, for joining us as well. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Meek, a news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.